It is, according to Afghan observers, now becoming a major threat. This group has been able to carry out so many suicide bombings within 2 months.
Dozens are killed when Islamic State attacks a Shiite gathering in Kabul. It's Friday, December 29th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, President Trump criticizes China for supplying oil to North Korea. South Korea cracks down on Bitcoin. And could China become the next wine center of the world? That's all on today's VOA Asia. Afghan officials say that more than 40 people have been killed and 84 others wounded in a suicide attack on a building in Kabul that houses a Shiite Muslim cultural center with ties to Iran. A spokesman for the Afghan Ministry of Public Health told reporters 4 women and 2 children were among those killed in the blast. Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack. My colleague Sarah Williams spoke with reporter Ayaz Gul, who said that the attack is the latest in a series by Islamic State.
Well, what we understand from statements the Afghan Interior Minister has issued as of this moment, that there were apparently several attackers involved in this deadly assault on a cultural center which has ties to Iran in a very secure part of Kabul. And it was a well-coordinated attack in a way that there was a small bomb that went off in the beginning. And when people gathered around the area, in the basement of this building where the cultural center was located, then the suicide bomber blew himself up. That is why it caused so many casualties. And then there was a third blast, we understand, according to initial investigation, which happened when more people rushed to the scene, ambulances rushed to the scene to collect the victims, to take them to the hospital. Then the third blast went off and it caused additional casualties. So as of this moment, we know for sure that more than 41 people have been killed, including women, and around 90 people have been wounded in this one of the deadliest attacks in recent months in Kabul.
Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attack. This certainly sounds like it was carefully planned.
Yes, that is interesting to explain, that Islamic State apparently is becoming a greater threat now for the security of Kabul, because since early October, there have been 7 suicide bombings in the Afghan capital that have killed a total of 130 people, and all of them were against either worship places of the minority Shiite community or their processions. And as we saw once again, Islamic State targeted another Shiite-linked facility in Kabul. So it is, according to Afghan observers, now becoming a major threat than the Taliban insurgency, particularly for the city of Kabul, where we see a lot of security in place, but still, this group has been able to carry out so many suicide bombings within 2 months.
It's interesting because Islamic State has been apparently weakened in the Middle East, in Iraq and in Syria. It almost seems as though it's gaining strength in Afghanistan.
Yes, that is what we even heard Russian officials saying only last week, that according to their intelligence information, currently the number of Islamic State loyalists in Afghanistan is around 10,000 fighters. And the Russian presidential envoy for Afghanistan, Kobolov, claimed that fighters who have fled Syria and Iraq are also now arriving in large numbers in Afghanistan and joining the ranks of the Afghan branch of Islamic State. So obviously, it's not only Russia, but Pakistan and Iran. All the neighboring countries are worried at this increasing strength of Islamic State, and they have been trying to create an alliance so that they could deal with this threat, which is now becoming dangerous in a way that the Islamic State fighters are targeting mostly civilians in Afghanistan. And that is obviously creating big problems, big challenges for Afghan security forces, who are already struggling to contain advances of the Taliban insurgency.
Reporter Ayaz Gul speaking to Sarah Williams. Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani called the attack a crime against humanity. The White House issued a statement Thursday that condemned the attack and offered its deepest condolences to the victims and their families. And the UN assistance mission in Afghanistan called the attack another truly despicable crime in a year already marked by unspeakable atrocities. The Taliban insurgency even distanced itself from the attack, saying its fighters do not target civilian facilities. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top stories trending on voanews.com. China criticizes U.S. and German embassies for interference in court cases. A North Korean boat captain is charged in a theft from a tiny Japanese island. Myanmar drops illegal drone charges against journalists. India's lower house approves a bill banning instant divorce. And children in conflict suffer from shocking levels of violence. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on our Facebook page at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia now continues. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Pakistan has warned the United States against undertaking any unilateral military action on its soil and rejected as baseless accusations of inaction against the Haqqani network plotting deadly attacks in neighboring Afghanistan. Chief Military Spokesman Major General Asif Ghafoor reiterated Thursday that Pakistani forces have undertaken indiscriminate operations against terrorists, including Haqqanis, rendering U.S. charges of inaction as irrelevant and baseless. U.S. officials have long accused Islamabad of turning a blind eye or even covertly helping the Afghan Taliban and Haqqanis to stage cross-border attacks against Afghan and U.S.-led forces. General Ghafoor questioned and criticized the U.S. threat, saying they ignore a huge price in both blood and treasure that Pakistan has paid in fighting terrorism in support of coalition efforts in Afghanistan. He noted that Islamabad has been contributing and cooperating for peace inside Afghanistan and shall keep on doing this.
No amount of coercion can work. It is only the engagement and trust-based cooperation which can take us forward towards enduring peace in the region.
The Pentagon recently told Congress it would work to expand cooperation with Pakistan in areas where our interests converge and to take unilateral steps in areas of divergence. Earlier this month, CIA Director Mike Pompeo warned Islamabad that if it does not eliminate the alleged safe havens inside its territory, the U.S. will do everything we can to destroy them. General Ghafoor cautioned that his country has done all it can to control the attacks and called on the U.S. and Afghanistan to do more.
We have done enough and we cannot do any more for anyone. Actually, this is turn and time for Afghanistan and United States to do more rather than asking Pakistan.
General Ghafoor added that Pakistan is securing its long, porous frontier with Afghanistan by building a fence, security posts, and forts to control cross-border movement. He added that the fencing project will be completed by December of 2018. U.S. officials have not elaborated on what kind of military action they intend to take. In 2011, U.S. Special Forces conducted a unilateral operation in the Pakistani city of Abbottabad and killed al-Qaeda chief Osama bin Laden. CIA-run drones have also been targeting suspected militant hideouts in the border regions of Pakistan, and some anticipate expansion of such strikes deep inside the country. Happening now in Asia, the families of two journalists detained in Myanmar on charges of violating state secrets said on Thursday that both men are innocent. The two journalists, Hwa Lone and Cho So-woo, were arrested December 12th for allegedly acquiring important secret papers from two police who had worked in Rakhine State. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on this Friday morning. U.S. President Donald Trump has accused China of facilitating oil shipments into North Korea. That's despite China's insistence it has not violated United Nations sanctions limiting oil shipments to the rogue nation. On Twitter, the U.S. president wrote, "Caught red-handed, very disappointed that China is allowing oil to go into North Korea. There will never be a friendly solution to the North Korea problem if this continues to happen." A South Korean newspaper reported earlier Thursday that Chinese and North Korean ships had illicitly connected at sea to get oil into North Korea. The UN Security Council last week imposed new sanctions designed to limit North Korean access to oil in response to the country's recent long-range missile test. In November, it test-launched its latest intercontinental ballistic missile, which many U.S. experts have warned would be capable of striking anywhere on U.S. soil. China has repeatedly said it is enforcing all resolutions against Pyongyang, despite doubts in the U.S., South Korea, and Japan that loopholes continue to exist. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, a top Chinese drug enforcement official on Thursday said the United States needs to do more to fight its opioid epidemic. Yu Haibin, the division director at the Chinese Ministry of Public Security's Narcotics Control Bureau, told journalists in Beijing there was little evidence that showed China was the source of the powerful opioid fentanyl. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. South Korea's government said on Thursday that it will impose additional measures to regulate speculation in cryptocurrency trading within the country. South Korea's Minister of the Office for Government Policy Coordination, Hong Nam-ki, said that the steps would include a ban on opening anonymous cryptocurrency accounts and new legislation to allow regulators to close virtual coin exchanges if needed, a measure recommended by the Justice Ministry. He said, first, opening new anonymous cryptocurrency accounts for virtual coin exchanges will be immediately banned. Second, providing anonymous accounts to new members of existing cryptocurrency exchanges also will be immediately banned. South Korea had previously announced its plans to tax capital gains from cryptocurrency trading to tackle what it sees as the risk of excessive speculation. Bitcoin, the world's biggest and best-known cryptocurrency, has gained more than 19-fold value this year. In South Korea, Bitcoin has been extremely popular, drawing wide participation from housewives and from students. Sunday is New Year's Eve, and if you plan to celebrate the New Year, you might pop a bottle of champagne or sparkling wine. There are nearly 500 wineries in Napa County, California, producing approximately 1,000 varieties of wine. But now, Napa Valley might be getting some competition from China. As VOA Mandarin Service correspondent Che Wu reports, China is not only poised to become one of the world's top wine-consuming countries, it's moving into wine production.
Pop the cork. Pour the wine. Swirl. Sniff. Sip. Savor. the steps for appreciating fine wine are becoming familiar to Chinese who are looking for an alternative to China's traditional grain-based spirits.
Nowadays, many people in China have given up baijiu, no more baijiu, because wine has enough alcohol. But it's also good for health. It can soften the human's blood vessels. People are changing.
Wang is not alone. Chinese are visiting Northern California's Napa Valley wine region in numbers never seen before.
It's interesting because the Chinese market in Napa is the fastest growing international market that we have. According to the statistics from our Napa Valley, or Visit Napa Valley, our visitor bureau here in Napa Valley, China was the number one international market in the Napa Valley last year.
A must-see stop for Chinese tourists is the Yao Family Wines Vineyard, owned by retired basketball star Yao Ming. Yao's celebrity aside, his wines have won praise from leading wine critic Robert Parker.
The Cabernet Sauvignon is very nice. The taste is great.
About an hour's drive to the east, the University of California, Davis has one of the country's top programs for the science of growing grapes and winemaking.
From what I can see, there were not many Chinese students previously, but now in my class, and also among those who came after me, there are now many more Chinese.
Compared to famous wine regions like nearby Napa and Bordeaux in France, these Chinese students believe that the wine industry will have a more promising future in their homeland.
In Asia, especially in China, the people are getting richer. This is one factor. Wine in China is just starting. Before, we imported a lot of wine, and now we start to build new vineyards. The grape wines are still growing. It's like a newborn baby. Chinese wine carries a lot of hope.
Hope that has some of these students thinking that their first jobs might not be here in California's wine country, but building a new wine country back home in China. Chi Wu, VOA News, Napa Valley, California.
This news alert from VOA Asia, more than 40 doctors, nurses, and firefighters from Britain are traveling to Bangladesh to help deal with an outbreak of diphtheria in refugee camps. Thousands of Rohingya Muslims have fled across the border from Myanmar into refugee camps in Cox's Bazar, and more than 20 refugees have died from diphtheria. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. One of the big things that happened in 2017 here in Washington was the partial eclipse of the sun, where thousands of people could be found staring at the sky through special glasses. But from exploring the rings of Saturn to a new satellite to monitor pollution on Earth, 2017 was a remarkable one in space. As VOA's George Putich tells us, a milestone was set on the International Space Station, and a new infrared telescope got ready for launch in 2018.
Let's start with the glorious end of a very successful mission. The deep space probe Cassini-Huygens was directed to burn in Saturn's atmosphere so it would not contaminate its moons with microbes from Earth that inevitably hitch a ride on all spacecraft. It spent 20 years exploring Jupiter and Saturn, landing a probe on Saturn's moon Titan, and discovering water on another moon, Enceladus. What scientists said in 2004 applies to all of Cassini's discoveries.
I don't think you have to be a ring scientist to imagine what last night was for us. It was beyond description, really. It was mind-blowing. It was every adjective you could think of.
One notable launch this year was the European Space Agency satellite Sentinel-5 Precursor. It will monitor air pollution caused by both man-made and natural activities, alerting people about concentration of pollutants that may affect their health.
It's about understanding the sources of these trace gases, these pollutants, where they're coming from, how they're linked to man-made and natural activities.
Aboard the International Space Station, NASA astronauts performed their 200th spacewalk, and astronaut Peggy Whitstone set a new U.S. record for time spent in space. On Earth, scientists were busy preparing new important missions for 2018. Among them, the James Webb Infrared Telescope, which will be able to look at newly discovered Earth-sized planets around distant stars.
We'll use Webb to study the atmospheres of those planets to look and see what chemical constituents those atmospheres have. Is there water there? Is there ozone, perhaps?
Good thing that the new telescope will be positioned 1.5 million kilometers from Earth, because as German scientists warned this year, the space around our planet is becoming increasingly polluted with space junk.
The energy contained in a 1 centimeter particle hitting a satellite at that velocity roughly corresponds to an exploding grenade.
Scientists have proposed a number of ideas for reducing the amount of the space debris, but so far none have been selected. George Putich, VOA News.
A rehabilitation center in the western Indian city of Pune is providing a second chance at life for soldiers who got critically wounded while serving their nation. The Paraplegic Rehabilitation Center, inaugurated in 1974, is home to 91 paraplegic soldiers. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us, the center aims to provide the soldiers with opportunities to become self-reliant.
It's game time at this rehabilitation center in India.
We regularly exercise here in the evening. Then we do some small work in the workshop, which helps in passing time.
But it's more than just getting a workout. Everyone here is a disabled former serviceman.
Actually, we are having 91 soldiers. Out of that, 40 soldiers are a quadriplegic. The four limbs are not working. And 51 jawan, paraplegic, two limbs are not working.
Launched in 1974 in the Indian city of Pune, the Paraplegic Rehab Center aims to help former soldiers achieve self-reliance. More than games and artwork, these former soldiers have opportunities to hone practical skills as well. In the shop area, for instance, a magnetic table helps hold metals in place while residents do their work.
We stay happy, and this is the reason why the feeling that we are sick or disabled doesn't come to our minds.
So they spend their days together working, playing, and living life as a community with a shared experience and a shared opportunity in a place designed to give them a second chance at life after having sacrificed so much for their country. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And this is our last show of 2017, and by the time we get together next time, it will be 2018. Workers are making final preparations in New York City for Sunday night's massive celebration in Times Square. Each year since 1907, a huge ball has descended a 43-meter flagpole atop the Times building to usher in the new year. The 3-meter, 65-centimeter wide ball is covered with 288 Waterford crystal triangles. Tim Tompkins, the president of the Times Square Alliance, says the theme this year is the Gift of Serenity design, which features patterns resembling butterflies flying.
The theme of the crystals this year is the Gift of Serenity, and God knows after this crazy 2017, serenity is something we all appreciate and need. People may need some serenity on the night itself also, because it's going to be a very cold night.
Weather forecasters are calling for temperatures around minus 13 degrees Celsius with a so-called real feel of minus 24 degrees overnight in New York. Whatever you're doing to celebrate the new year, be sure to join us again Monday morning for another VOA Asia, the first of 2018. You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you, and you can find us at voanews.com. Be sure to let us hear from you, comment on our VOA Asia Facebook, And you can email us. We are voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, the ever-faithful Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Happy New Year to you, and enjoy the rest of your day.